Good morning, everybody. Why don't we take our seats and we'll call this meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. It's a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Pastor Warren Tolliver, who's the senior pastor of the St. Paul AME Church in Dallas. He'll be performing this morning's invocation. Thank you, Pastor Tolliver, for performing this morning's invocation. Please rise.
Let us pray. Dear God, thank you for this great group of men and women who lead this great city. Thank you for their integrity and service. And give them the courage to make the tough decisions to make this a better place for all. Amen.
Ms. Davis, could you lead us in the pledge?
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sure. Pastor? It was all good, Pastor, all good.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Pastor Tolliver, I want to express to you publicly how very glad I am to see you here as a fellow AME clergy person. I'm delighted to have you here. You have done a good job since you've been in Dallas. You're doing an excellent job at St. Paul Metropolitan, South Dallas, and the entire community is better for your presence. Keep leading, keep preaching, keep doing God's business. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pastor, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate it. I'm tempted to have Mr. Cadane saying we're dreaming of a white Christmas, given that. But we'll at least hold off on that. We have one special presentation, and Councilmember Atkins will lead that. Councilmember?
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. It's snowing outside, a white Christmas. It's beautiful at City Hall. Everything is white. We're not in the White House. We're in Dallas, Texas. You know, it's a great day today, and especially in District 8, you know, we talk about education. I know Merlin Leffert and Vaughn Seal Hills talk about education, and we always talk about what's going in the southern sector of Dallas. And it's a great opportunity that you have people like State Representative Helen Giddens and Demetrius Sampson and the Miller Foundation who came by and said, what can we do to improve our education system in the southern sector? We heard about all the negative things about Paul Quinn College, about education, but we do not hear about the positive things, what's going on at Paul Quinn College. There are many positive things that are going on at Paul Quinn College, is that they're not going to close. And that's positive. They also believe in education. And when with the support, you know, you always have a captain of the ship, and the captain is not going to abandon the ship. If the ship do go down, the captain is still going to be there, and that's Michael Sorrell, and he is the captain of that ship. And this is not a great Titanic. And Michael Sorrell, you know, came to Paul Quinn College to say, hey, we're going to build education. And to build education as an institution in the southern sector, that which we do have a major four-year college in the southern sector, in my district, in District 8, is glad to have Max Israel on board to make sure we're going to push education. When Paul Quinn was going through this tribulation and this opportunity, we did have a person last year who came to Paul Quinn, and that is Merlin Leffert. And I want Merlin, when you get a chance to come up, Merlin Leffert saw the education ability of what he could do as a mayor to lead the business people, you know, to help Paul Quinn and to bring construction opportunity to make sure Paul Quinn is a foundation of the city. with Mark Lepper and also with Bonsia Joan Hill, who used to serve on the board of Paul Quinn College, was also a Leland community. And 2 years ago, people did not understand that Mark Lepper was at Paul Quinn before anything happened with accreditation. He has shown a leadership to be there before something happened. And that's why you have a great mayor who is there before something do happen great. Today is a great day to recognize some of the key people. And there are some people who is not here, but are the people who is here today. And I just want to recognize them for the opportunities, which they did not have to do this, but they did. First person I want to recognize is State Representative Helen Giddens. Will you stand? And we also, come on up, we also, the Texas Black Legislative Caucus, and she is part of that, and she is anyone there from the Texas Legislative Black Caucus? She represents that. And also, Michael Sorrell and the Miller Foundation, would you please come up? And also, one of our great community leaders, Demetria Sampson, would you please come up also, Demetria? And when you say that, you know, and I know State Representative has many, you know, special recognition, proclamation that she's going to get all the time. But this is one great special recognition that she is a prince, a queen, that when she saw the opportunity that what Paul Quinn was going through, she did not wait, she did not hesitate. She just picked up the phone and started calling people at 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock at night, saying, hey, this ship is not going down today. And that's what she did. I mean, she called. I mean, she single-handedly brought everybody together. And by doing that, State Representative, it's an honor to recognize you with respect to recognition. That, I mean, she did. I mean, she called and called and called and called. And we got to be blessed to have this person as a state representative in my district who represents my district, also Paul Quinn College, also the city of Dallas. She is a fighter. State Representative Helen Giddens has represented the education issue of the African-American in the state of Texas in District 109 for 16 years. State Representative Helen Giddens has been a vocal supporter of Paul Quinn College that resides in District 8 in the state of Dallas. State Representative Helen Giddens led an army, a state election official commissioned to initiate an attack response to Paul Quinn College accreditation move by the Southern Association of College and School. State Representative Helen Giddens inspired the Miller Foundation, Attorney Demetria Sampson, and others to donate funds to Paul Quinn College. State Representative Helen Giddens led the Black Legislative College to raise $1.25 million for Paul Quinn College. Now, therefore, I, Tanel Atkins, on behalf of Dallas City Council Maritone Level of City of Dallas, do hereby send a special recognition to State Representative Helen Giddens on the second day of December 2009.
Thank you very much, Councilman Atkins, and to the mayor and our distinguished city council. Thank you so much for taking a moment not to recognize me so much, but to recognize Paul Quinn, which really is a very, very, very valuable asset to our community. I can see a time when Paul Quinn will take its rightful place in terms of being the southern gateway to the city of Dallas. That ought to be our anchor tenant as we try to turn around an area that we often think of as a blighted area. Education is so very important to me. It's always been my priority in the legislature, and I know you talk about education an awful lot. I hear your mayor talk about education and the difference in going to college and the difference in going to prison, and I think all of us would rather help a young child go to college rather than to have to pay $30,000+ a year to keep them in jail. And one of the things that we have to do, you shouldn't have invited me up here, that colleges and universities have to do, not only Paul Quinn, but UNT Dallas, the University of North Texas at Dallas, is we have to find ways in this state to raise not just the ceiling in education. We have to do that. But our biggest challenge is to raise the floor. And so when you have academic bridge programs at major universities, and when you have a Paul Quinn College that takes what we consider or sometimes call underprepared students, which to me just means you didn't get a high test score on your SAT, doesn't really measure your capabilities. We must continue to support the idea of making education affordable and accessible to all children. And then let me just close, because I really am here representing the Legislative Black Caucus. Paul Quinn is in the district that I represent. It's in the district that Councilman Atkins represents. But we're both smart enough to know that institutions that happen to be residents in our districts are far bigger than we are. But on behalf of the Texas Legislative Black Caucus, we came in to do three things. We said, President Sorrell, we will help you raise $1.5 million. And we're pretty close to that. We know where the other $250,000 is. So we've delivered on that. We said we will help you get your certificate of authority from the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. That was done on October the 29th. We said governance around Dallas is always considered to be an issue. Whenever we go to talk to people about Paul Quinn, they want to talk about governance. We worked with a very courageous bishop to restructure that board and change the governance. So the bylaws have been adopted on November the 2nd, and beginning in January of 2010, for the next 3 years, that board will be chaired by a person that is a non-AME. It will be a business or community leader. The fourth year, it will be chaired by an AME, not necessarily the bishop. But the bishop worked with us on that. We've changed the supermajority in the bylaws to get certain things done. And in addition to that, we've reduced the size of that board from 31 members to 20. I've talked way too long, but I have to say a special thanks to Linda Evans and the Meadows Foundation for coming to us at a very, very critical time. And I have to say thank you to Demetrius Sampson and so many other people who have come to the aid of this very, very valuable asset to our community. Not enough people have stepped up, but we're hoping that the fever catches on. Thank you so very much. I'm sorry I talked so long.
You know, and that brings you to another important issue. You're talking about the nonprofit foundation. You're talking about Linda Evans and also Bruce here. You know, when they hear the cry of the Southern Section Union, and you know Helen, like she just beat that drum. She just can't stop beating it. Now that energized bunny, you know, she just run. And she went to the Miller Foundation and said, you know what? We need help. You know what they did? They said, hey, what do you need? They came out, they interviewed with Dr. Sorrell, and they look at Paul Quinn College and say, you know what? We're going to write a check for $500,000. And they did it. And we're going to support this. I mean, anybody who comes up write a check for $500,000 and say, hey, we're going to support you, but this check is not just a check to help you, but we're going to be involved. We're going to be supportive. We're going to do whatever is necessary to make sure Paul Quinn stays alive in the city of Dallas. And we got to thank the Miller Foundation and also Linda and Bruce also for your this special recognition to the Miller Foundation of Dallas has admission to assist people in institutions that test improves the quality of the expected standards of life, Bill 7, first generation. Now, I'm not going to read all the whereas, but the Miller Foundation understand and agree with the mission of Paul Quinn College, had decided to assist Paul Quinn College in achieving their mission throughout the monetary gift. The Miller Foundation of Dallas had donated $500,000 to Paul Quinn College, which is the largest individual donation to the school in more than a decade. And that should deserve a hand of applause for that. Therefore, I, Chanel, act on behalf of Dallas City Council, Mayor Tom Levin, City of Dallas, do hereby send a special recognition to the Miller Foundation on this second day of December. With Linda and Bruce, please come forward.
Thank you so much. thank you, Councilman Atkins and Mayor Leppert, and to all of our city council men and women. We appreciate so much the opportunity to be here today. You all are honoring us, but really and truly, we are privileged to be able to support Paul Quinn College. We hope our gift will serve as leverage and confidence that other people will step up to the plate. We believe that Paul Quinn is an extremely valuable asset to our community, and so we do feel very honored to be able to support that. And I also want to put our thanks to you all, give our thanks to you all, because the City of Dallas has been a wonderful partner over the years with the foundation. You all have been so easy to work with, and we just appreciate the ability to work with you all in improving our community. Thank you.
You know, what can you say about an individual, a person, you know, before we even start this journey? You know, and this person says, well, keep my name out of the paper, don't talk to me, I just want to give from my heart. And we said, well, what are you going to give? And no one knew who this person was going to be. And she said, well, here's a check for $50,000 before anyone asked. She said, here's a check for my personal account, $50,000. And that deserved, you know, a great institution, a great music. Great hand, right on cue. We know it's good. Go ahead. But a great person, and I want to let Von Seal Jones Hill to do this special recognition, because this person has been around the City of Dallas for a long time, and she gives from her heart, and she loves the City of Dallas. Okay, Von Seal, you will make this special recognition.
Thank you so much, Councilman. Before Ms. Sampson was a well-known, well-recognized, and well-respected lawyer in the City of Dallas, she was a poor, scraggly, broke law student at the University of Texas at Austin. We graduated, both of us graduated from the University of Texas at Austin Law School. She was a year behind me, but that's when we got to be friends and have remained friends over the years. I have a deep love and respect for Ms. Sampson, because Ms. Sampson is truly about the community's business. At the time, so long ago, when the Jews needed deliverance, Mordecai said to Esther, perhaps you have come to the kingdom for just such a time as this. Demetrius, perhaps you have come to the kingdom for just such a time as this. Thank you. Congratulations.
Good morning. I want to thank Councilman Atkins for this recognition. I love the City of Dallas. It's a great city. It deserves a great college. It deserves a college that has the mission that Paul Quinn College has. If you want to know why, it's because there's somebody out there who needs Paul Quinn. And there's somebody out there who, but for Paul Quinn College, is not going to get an opportunity to get an education. And education is the great equalizer, always has been and always will be. And so I thank you, the City of Dallas, for giving me an opportunity to be of service. I thank you for giving me $2.50 that I could give $2.50 to somebody else. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And Dr. Mike Terrell, you want to say something?
Good morning. I just want to say thank you. It is important that this college not just exist, but that it thrives. We exist to teach a group of students how to dream, and not dream small dreams, but dream incredible dreams, and to become servant leaders. And I once heard someone say that a child learns what to become by watching those before it. And my students benefit tremendously from having friends such as these and friends such as yourself. It cannot be overstated how important it is for them to realize that people care about what happens to them. Right, and that people that they see on the news walk the campus with them and call them friends, because that doesn't always happen in their world. So as you make your decisions for budgets, because, you know, I'm always going to ask for more money, so you might as well just get accustomed to that. But as you make your decisions, please keep in mind that we are an institution that has turned itself around and is doing some amazing things out there. And you don't have to just take my word for it. I invite everyone to come out and see what we're doing, because we love what we're doing, we love our students, and we love the opportunities that education provides them. But most of all, we love our friends and we love our family, and we are so appreciative for every opportunity that we are given. So thank you on behalf of my board, thank you on behalf of my staff, but most of all, thank you on behalf of my students, and take care.
And before we close, it would not be right, would not have Mayor left the session of Mayor. You done did so much for Power Queen before Power Queen went through the transition, Mayor.
Thanks, Mr. Atkins. As Mr. Atkins mentioned, I've been involved in Paul Quinn for a number of years now, and I believe strongly that not only is it important, and Michael, you said it, not only for your students, but it's important for the community. This is an important way, if you look at other cities that have colleges that are similar, they have provided leaders into the community. And that's why we all gain. It's not just a discussion about Paul Quinn. As important as it is, as important it is for the individual students, as was pointed out, this is an option where otherwise children, young people would not have the opportunity for a college education. But it is also critical for the community. And that's why I've gotten involved, and that's why we've had so many corporate sponsors that have stepped up. Clearly, you've seen some of the people today, but in the years past, we've had people like Home Depot and other organizations that have stood up and said, this is an important effort. I know Deloitte has been a major contributor to you in a lot of different ways. Austin Industries has, and people that have stood up and said it's an important effort. It was just said a moment ago, the only way, when all said and done, we try to do an awful lot of different things in this city to help people. The reality of it is, the only way that you ever elevate an individual or a community is through education. And the reality of it is, if we don't get kids into college with a world that is much more competitive and is going to be increasingly competitive, then they are simply not going to have the opportunities. The dreams that they should have, that they have, are not going to be achieved unless they've got that opportunity for a college education. We just don't have the type of positions that are going to allow people to be successful in today's world unless they've got a college education. That's why Paul Quinn is so important. That's why it's important to the students, but it's also important to the community. So thanks to each one of you for what you do, for elevating not only Paul Quinn, but the community. I know we've got a long ways to go, but with efforts like this, I hope that we look towards a future that's going to be very bright, and not only for the school, but for a lot of kids that are going to contribute to this community and this nation long in the future. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Helen, thanks so much for everything you did. And are doing.
Thank you.
Madrano, you ready for speakership? You ready for speakers? Speakers. Okay. We have two or three speakers this morning, and our first speaker is going to be Cal Joseph. Ms. Colbert has counseled, followed by Al Lipscomb and Skip Wilson. While Mr. Joseph is coming forward, let me recite the rules for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council, or while attending the city council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak. When you see the amber light, that, well, not the amber light, I'm on a different day, huh? When you see the 3 minute mark on the board, that means you have 3 minutes to speak, then you'll see a 30-second flashing and then red flashing, which means stop. State your name and your address for the record. Is Mr. Kyle Joseph here? No? Mr. Lipscomb, is Mr. Lipscomb not here? Skip Wilson. Mr. Wilson, you want to come forward? Come forward and state your name and your address for the record.
Excuse my hoarseness. I picked up a light cold.
Okay.
I'm Skip Wilson. I reside in Monroe, Louisiana. I have been a farmer all my life and did something that most other people hadn't done. About 30-odd years ago, I was had a lake there on this farm of ours and was using it for irrigation purposes. Pumping it exceedingly low. And I kept looking at the Arkansas River sitting over here, elevation here, the lake here. And I got a hold of some engineer friends of mine and asked them for some help. And they gave it to me. I put in an 18-inch siphon over the levee, which was about 25 feet tall. Had to put in an auxiliary vacuum pump to keep the water flowing. We moved 9 million gallons of water a day for 4 or 5 months at a cost of $120 a year for the electricity bill. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think I can solve the water problem for the city of Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Austin, and all. Done some checking around with a friend of mine who is a much better speaker than me, but he had a little problem with the grandson. He had to go attend to that today, so I got put in charge of coming down here. Anyway, I'm building a pipeline across the state of Arkansas from the Arkansas River, which is free and clear of most everything. They swim in it, fish in it, play in it, do everything. And we have in excess of 700 million gallons of water, which is tailwater. It goes through the dam, goes out into the Mississippi River, from there to the Gulf, and gone. This water could be reused. We talked to the North Texas Municipal Water Association, and hopefully we'll get something done with them. They're not quite as big as what we were anticipating. We could put 500 million gallons of water in the city of Dallas. I don't think you can use that much at one time before you try. I'd like to make the mayor aware of our interest in helping. We'd like to take this thing. San Antonio's got problems. Austin's got problems. Waco's got problems. All of them. Fort Worth. They all of them. If we could get together, meet, we'd like to come down and talk to you people. Sit down and talk to you. That's all I need to say.
No, we appreciate it. Sir, if I could, Charlie Stringer, who is in our water department, if you could visit with him offline, that would be helpful, and then we'll kind of see where next steps are. So I'm going to have Mr. Stringer come over. He'll just sit down over there, and I'll have him come visit with you. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Mr. Mayor, that's all of our speakers this morning.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Appreciate it. The first item on the agenda, then, is the approval of minutes of the November 18th. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Our boards and commissions, Madam Secretary?
The appointments of board and commissions, item number 2. We have several appointments, individual and full council. First being the Board of Adjustments, Samuel A. Gillespie being renominated by Councilmember Cadane. Environmental Health Commission, John Heinberger being nominated by Councilmember Hosko. Judicial Nominating Commission, Daniel Kushak being nominated by Councilmember Hosko. And Andre L. Turner being nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Carraway. Martin Luther King Community Center Board, Sandra Broden being renominated by Mayor Leverett. Permit and License Appeal Board, James Morris being nominated by Councilmember Cadane. Housing Finance Corporation Board, Jim Harp being nominated by Councilmember Margolin. Reinvestment Zone 2 Board, Kenneth Steinhardt being renominated by Councilmember Coop. Reinvestment Zone 4 Board, Jack Brzezinski being renominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Reinvestment Zone 10 Board, Alexia Griffin being renominated by Councilmember Medrano. Reinvestment Zone 18 Board, Curtis Parker being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Dennis Stone being renominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. I'll meet qualifications for service on the board. I don't know if any of the nominees are here this morning, but would you stand if you are here? Thank you, sir.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered.
That's all of your business.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Two briefings on the agenda for today. Hopefully we can get through both of these before noon, and then we do have an executive session that we'll have. There's a number of different cases that we'll go through on that. The first one has to do with our long-range water supply plan. Mary, can I turn to you?
We have two briefings to you this morning that are largely informative. They don't require decisions today or immediately, but there are focuses that I want you to be aware of. One of them, in fact, in my mind, the most important long-range policy decision that you make and planning you have to do in your terms as council member is long-range water planning. It is also the most complex and difficult, and because it has such a long planning frame, 30 to 50 years, it is very important that we focus on it and keep it moving. Today's briefing is an overview of that. It is simply just to begin to let you see the whole picture. In the next 2 or 3 months, you will be having to make some decisions that affect our long-range water plan, and I want you to have the basis of knowledge as you begin to make those, and Ms. Puckett will do that today. As I said, we don't require any decisions of you today. It's just kind of a bring everybody up to the same point of knowledge on this very, very critical responsibility that you have during your terms as council. Jody?
Thanks, Mary. Well, good morning. I'd like to try to keep my comments within 50 minutes. I've talked too long about this topic, but I want to take you to page 3 of the briefing to give you a little background of our utility. We're a regional utility. Just to remind you, we're about 1,500 employees strong, serve over 2.4 million people, and that's going to grow over the course of the next 60 years, and that's really the basis of what we want to talk about today. A little bit of background on page 4 about what we do. In other words, we use surface water to provide potable water service to our customers. In the early beginnings of the city, it relied on wells and springs. Some of you know Broward Springs. That supply long failed in meeting the needs of the city. And so we use a long-range planning process in order to provide for that need. I want to point out on the 5th or 6th bullet where it says water supply plans in 1959. For example, we've implemented that plan. It had 3 major supplies, Ray Roberts, Lake Tawakoni, and Lake Ray Hubbard, that were part of the work that the citizens and the Dallas City Council did back then to have us where we are today. So I just want to make a point. It takes a long time. But these aren't dust-gathering documents. These are plans that we implement.
Jody, I just want to make one point. The first bullet on this page is very, very important for all of us to be aware of and remember. This is not our water. We are granted by the state the responsibility for maintaining it and being a purveyor to other parts of our region. But this is state water ultimately, not our water.
Yeah, good. Thanks for reminding me about that, because what's real important about that as well is we have to use it beneficially. We can't waste it. We can't necessarily hoard it. We have to show and demonstrate a use and a demonstration of how to sustain that water supply. Page 5 just shows you a brief timeline about how long it may take to bring on a new supply. I mentioned Ray Roberts earlier. It took about 25 years to get that built. Permitting processes are even more complex than they were then. So those are challenges that we face today. Page 6 talks a little bit about where we are as a regional supplier today. As many of you know, both Dallas and our customer cities, which there are over 25 of them, we enjoy some lower rates because of our regional approach. And just as a little side note, we do have a memorandum of agreement that we use to set those rates for our customer cities. It has been a successful process for us over time. We're in the middle of reviewing those terms and conditions, and I hope to bring you back some proposals in January for that. In addition, I think what's important as we get through this briefing is the regional cooperation is going to be paramount in all our success for the region as we move forward. Slide 7 gives you a little pictorial of where our current lake supplies are. As you can see in the purple here, Lake Fork and Lake Palestine are our next supplies that will come online. We've been investing quite a bit of money in the Lake Fork line, about $300 million for a pump station and pipeline that will begin to move water later this summer. So that's just part of the challenges that we're faced with. Also, I'll just mention, to give you an idea of the distances, Lake Tewakene is about 50 miles-ish, give or take, from the city center of the city. Lake Fork is another 80. Palestine's a little further. So the close-in water is gone. So that's just another challenge that we'll be faced with. Briefly on page 9, it gives you an idea just graphically of kind of the supply and demand of water planning. We project demand, we look at our existing supplies, and then we define what we need to go acquire in order to meet those needs. We have strategies that are outlined on the left side of that chart that shows the different components of what we're looking at in order to supply that need. One of the major issues on page 11 is a cornerstone component of what we're about is sustainability. We have to have our actions that will sustain our supply, whether it's meeting the drought of record, whether it's efficient use of the water by not wasting it, by being able to incorporate regional concepts in what we do. Page 12 is just a little highlight of some of the major activities that we've included as part of our annual budget, which the council has been supportive of, in order to maintain those concepts of sustainability. I'm going to jump to slide 14, which is a little matrix that we kind of put together of how we're doing on things. What this chart tries to demonstrate for you is our progress and process associated with gaining those additional supplies that we need to secure by 2060. We're in pretty good shape up to about 2035 as far as availability of water. We have two large projects, Wright-Patman and Lake Fastrell, that we're still working on as far as to get that supply in place. I want to skip to page 16 because I think sustainability as part of that is our water conservation reuse program. We invest a little over $4 million annually in our water conservation program. It is paying dividends back already, and I think that you'll see that in a couple little places. As most of you know, we have a time of day watering requirement. We try to lead by example. We try to change behavior, kind of treat it as a velvet hammer and not be punitive, and try to teach people the value of the water that they have. On pages 18 and 19, you get an idea of some of the programs that we've put out there for customers to use. One of the popular ones really has been our toilet program, and I think through our next water conservation strategic plan, you'll see some additional programs that we would be proposing, and we expect to bring that update to you later this spring. Page 20 shows a trend of what we've seen occurring when we implemented our conservation plan. You can see from this chart that the demand line, or what we call gallons per capita per day, this is trending downward. Our population is trending upward. And that, as they say, that is good. And so our programs are working, people are recognizing the need, and even with the blips in weather, so to speak, which we're in the middle of a blip, I think, again now, we're still saving that water. One of the things that you hear out there is that maybe that we waste water, that, you know, we're water hogs. And I want to show a comparison that we received from the Water Development Board. If you go to slide 21, that shows some comparisons with the large cities in Texas. Annually, cities report their water uses to the state. They're just kind of in one big lump. Now, what this shows is the state would report that we would use 240 gallons per capita per day. And so it's like, see your water hogs. Look at San Antonio. Look at Austin. Well, our residential usage is right in line with most of our neighbors. You know that Houston has quite a bit more water than rain than we do, but you can see even in the more arid parts of the state, we're right in line with it. And slide 22 kind of tells you why gallons per capita per day doesn't really tell the whole story. And the Water Development Board's not intending for people to compare one city to the other, but people tend to do that anyway. Real important here in Dallas is that we have in-migration during the day. One of the things we produce is jobs in this city, and I think that that's something we need to keep doing. So that's different than San Antonio. They don't import people from other parts of their region to work. They live in city and in that city and work in that city. So the calculations vary substantially, but just wanted to let you know, the council know, that our programs are progressing and beginning to be recognized in the state. So that's really great, I think, as we continue down that path. The next part of this briefing talks about interlocal cooperation. We've already entered into...
Jody, I'm sorry, I've got a little off track here. I just wanted to, talking about conservation, as we begin our water budgeting and planning for the next year, the steps we've taken in conservation to this point are the easy steps, so to speak. They're the steps everybody else has taken. We'll, as we begin this year and come back to you with the budgeting and the issues that we move forward, we'll be looking at some more more difficult steps that involve talking to our business community about conservation issues with water. We've had some conversations with the Citizens Council about this, but I just want you to know ahead of time, done a good job on conservation, we're having good results, but we are going to have to take the next step. That'll be coming this spring.
Yeah, in the spring we'll expect to see those things. For instance, there may be cooling tower retrofit proposals as an example, that we would incentivize those. Those cost money, but they produce savings of water. So that's the kind of thing I think Mary was referring to. So that's a cooperative effort as well, though, and in terms of with your customer, the next section really talks about cooperation with local providers. One of the biggest activities we have underway right now is our relationship with our Tarrant Regional Water District, which is basically the provider of raw water in the Tarrant County area. Our next lake that we're going to connect is Lake Palatine. So we've been working on that to develop some cost-saving opportunities, and I'll get you to slide 26 that kind of identifies where we are on that project. We've identified about a 20% savings that the city can recognize by working together on this 80-mile-plus pipeline to bring water from East Texas. We're in the process of sizing that along with the district, and in developing terms and conditions associated with constructing and financing that project. Slide 27 gives you an idea about the size of this project. These are big numbers, but so saving 20% of, you know, $978 million is a big number, but the projects are still extremely expensive. So one of the goals of this effort is to save those monies, cost share in the pipelines and operations, and it also provides some redundancy for both of the agencies in case something were to happen. So that's a good part of this. Slide 28 gives you an idea. It's pretty small, but to give you an overview, kind of a 30,000 foot level, of where the pipeline corridor would likely be up through this part of the region. We are looking at bringing the water to our Bachman plant for treatment purposes. That's one of the things we're considering. But again, Cedar Creek Reservoir, that those of you know that, Richland Chambers is down here, Tewakinee, Lake Fork, Tewakinee. So you could see that whole water supply regime, so to speak, that's out there. The next steps will be bringing forward later this spring a proposal for the project financing and facilities agreement that we'll be moving forward on. So that's a pretty exciting effort. The other thing that the council had already approved and that we're working on designing has to do with the reuse project with the North Texas Municipal Water District. It's on slide 30. I'm going to skip forward a little bit for the sake of time and just go on to the Region C 2011 plan. To go to slide 39, I think it is. Yeah. We are part of the Region C Planning Group and one of the three major suppliers in that group. And we will provide input to that plan as far as what is proposed for the needs. And so page 39 shows a timeline as far as the state requirements to get that plan done in order to get it submitted to the legislature. Page 40 shows the strategies that we'll be recommending in Region C, and the only minor change that we have is the Lake Ray Hubbard overdrafting permit. Council approved a few years ago studies and permit applications to gain additional water out of Lake Ray Hubbard. All our other strategies are intact, as well as the alternative strategies that you see on page 41. So to summarize, boy, that was quick. I did better than I thought. To summarize on slide 42, you know, we're on this path. We're on a great path. We're in good shape through 2035. We have to spend money to get there. As I mentioned, the Lake Powell Steam Project is a part of that. We're looking at all options, as in the water business. Nothing leaves the table if we can help it. So all options are on the table for us, even going to the Mississippi River, if that proved to be practical. Again, cornerstones, conservation, reuse, system sustainability, and regional partnership. So with that, Mary and Mayor, I'll turn it back.
Thank you very much. Starting on slide 9, where it lists components of water supply planning, and it may be that the little spreadsheet that is too small to read gives the information I'm looking for. But what I was wondering is in millions of gallons per day, is that how we measure it?
Mm-hmm.
What are we using now? Where do we expect to be in whatever the year you're looking at is? And then what are the breakdowns of how much we're going to get through reuse conservation reservoirs and existing and new reservoirs? Is that in those little spreadsheets there?
Well, that little spreadsheet is really more of a just an example of analysis. But if I could take you to the slide 14, which is the basically our list of work to do as far as what we're trying to gain for our long-range need.
So we are at 376 million gallons.
So we have currently, and this is what is in our supply inventory. So currently in our supply inventory, we have 376 million gallons per day of water connected. We have our Lake Fork project that's in the startup phase, so it will be connected by the spring and have full use of that. And then Lake Palestine is next and so forth and so on. You can see conservation and direct reuse on that chart as well. Those processes are also conservation. We're like 70% there to that number already. So a direct reuse project is part of the Cedar Crest Golf Course. The Stevens Park Golf Course and Zoo projects have a piece of that. And then under the categories called likely, we have some additional reuse that we've already accomplished there.
So the $200 million is the gap that we're trying to fill.
The $200 million is the big gap as far as inventory. The other projects that I've kind of laid out involve capital expenses, but as far as we have the inventory, we just have to be able to get it here. If that makes any sense.
Yes.
Okay.
It does. So we have everything accounted for, but we just have to build to it? Is that what it is?
But for the 200.
But for the 200.
In essence, I hasten to say everything, but for the most part, we feel pretty good about where we are as far as being able to count on the supply.
Okay. And then on slide 13, could you just briefly explain what the contract for return flows is and how that works?
When entities, first of all, return flows are wastewater discharges. And I use our one of our plants in this example. Our central wastewater treatment plant located at I-45 in Overton discharges into the Trinity River. And we have permitted the use of that water with the state of Texas. Once the water goes back into the river, state owns it again. So other entities upstream of us that discharge into Lake Louisville and into the Elm Fork of the Trinity River, we want a contract to secure those return flows. And so those some of those have been done by permit, and some of those will be done by contract.
Okay. And then on slide 18, where you mentioned the 1.2 million media campaign, do we have a way of measuring the success of that campaign, or is it simply we see that there is more water conservation, so we assume that the campaign is a success?
We do surveys to our media consultants as far as how our messages are received and so forth and so on. I'm not a good marketing person, but I know that I've seen, you know, how many remember your campaign, how many know where your water came from, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing I want to really target too is that we're working really hard with both Tarrant Regional and North Texas to try to streamline our media costs to spread the word and do it a little more cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, but we do surveys.
The cooperative efforts with the other purveyors in the region are really critical, and this has not been going on over history. In fact, we've been rather grumpy with each other for a long period of time, and 2-3 years ago we just said, guys, we've got to stop this. Water is such a critical issue. We're all up here in this region together. We need to be responsive, and I'm really proud of what we've done in that area, and I think the potential is just almost limitless in all sorts of areas. It does, you know, different parts of our region have drought when others do not. It does not make any sense to citizens that in one small city they can't water where everybody else can. So doing these cooperative educational efforts, marketing efforts, and capital efforts benefits everybody.
Okay. And then a final question on slide 27, where we're looking at the 20% saving in capital costs by working with Tarrant County or Tarrant Regional.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody else that could be brought into this? I mean, is it possible to bring in San Antonio, Austin, Houston for portions of this, or are they? Is that just not possible?
That's not really possible here because the water supply that we want to bring in is for the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I don't want to sound like I don't want to share, but we're not intending on providing that water.
So there's no reason for them to share.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I got to ask you, first, thank you for this report, Jody. Excellent report and extended. It's very good. Does Fort Worth own Joe Pool?
No.
What's the deal with Joe Pool?
The owner of Joe Pool is the Trinity River Authority. They were the local sponsor, and then they've contracted with Duncanville, Cedar Hill, Grand Prairie, Midlothian, or Mansfield, it's one of the M's, to pay for the debt service of that lake.
So we don't have access to that water?
No. Now, I will tell you, we are considering that lake from a standpoint of terminal storage for the Lake Palestine water.
And
so there's engineering discussions regarding that.
And that's the same with Cedar Creek?
Cedar Creek, being south,
and on really the eastern part of the Trinity is really Tarrant Regional's water.
Okay. Okay. On number seven, let's see. We already have pipeline working on both of those reservoirs, correct?
We have the
pipeline. Lake Four?
We have this pipeline here. The pumping is still being, the pumps are still being tested, mm-hmm. but if we had to move water today, we could move it.
Okay.
And then, of course, we have these pipelines already in place.
And then Palestine.
This is the project we're working with Tarrant Regional on. This does not exist.
Well, it's cheaper to go that route than to go up to Lake Fork?
Well, again, the Lake Fork piece is connected. So that gives me about 500 million gallons a day of connected inventory. In the long term, I'm going to need more than that.
More than that.
And so that's why this lake is next.
Okay.
And just to clarify, when you see this chart that says we need 1,000 million gallons a day, which is slide 14,
right.
That means I want to be able to connect and use 1,000 million gallons a day. Now, that is in 2060. So it's kind of hard to think of in terms, it's even hard for me to think in those terms sometimes, but that's the concept.
Yeah, but we need to be committed today to get to that point.
Right, because this raw water system is based on the drought of record. And so if I don't have it connected, I can't get it in here.
So that's my next question, is where are we with Wright, Pittman, and Fastrel?
Well, I'll let Chris Bowers talk about Fastrel for a moment if he chooses to. It's at the Supreme Court, and hopefully they'll hear that case.
Just to interject, that's the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has requested briefings on it, and that's where it stands.
Okay.
So somebody at the Supreme Court has showed an interest in it.
Good.
And that's as far as it is, and where it happens after that, literally no one knows.
Now,
Wright Patman is in the Sulphur River Basin, and it's the most eastern lake in the northeast part of the state. It is sort of tied up in a legislative basin study that's called the Region C, Region D study. And that study was to look at alternatives to Marvin Nichols, but it also has to look at the Sulphur Basin as a whole. So that study is due to the legislature, I think, after the first of the year. And so we'll see where we go from there. But right now, it's still in our plan.
Okay. Let's see, one more. Oh, just a quick question. On 20, how do you do that? How do we get more people, and you've got them using less water? I mean, can't we do ongoing what you've been doing?
They aren't leaving the faucet on when they brush their teeth, for one
thing.
That's
what I'm saying.
They aren't watering all day, all night.
So,
we are going to have to look at more processes and procedures that
keep
control that water use.
And
not necessarily to hurt us, but to not have to spend money to just turn a semi-arid region that we live in into a rainforest, which is kind of what we want to do right now.
Yeah, because it looks like we're doing a pretty good job of controlling that.
And that's what I was saying to you a minute ago. The next steps are the tough ones. We've taken the low-hanging fruit, really.
Okay. And my last question is, give me your thoughts on underground water.
My thoughts on underground water.
If that can be a possible future use and the cost comparative to where we're at.
Some of the alternative strategies, and we've been approached by a number of people that have groundwater. Groundwater is, some groundwater is not as renewable as others. A lot of us are familiar with the Edwards Aquifer, how it will refill with rainfall. Other panhandle water, for instance, doesn't refill. And so it is not a cornerstone of our strategy. Where it makes sense, where it could make sense, we'll consider it. I won't say it's the water of last resort, but it's so expensive and located in places far away, generally, that it's not as practical for us.
Okay.
But it's still on the table, as I mentioned, that we don't give us any options.
I was wondering how it compared with the reservoirs and moving reservoir water compared to the groundwater. But right now, what we're doing is the best cost.
That's what we believe, yes, based on our estimates so far.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Green.
Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Puckett, thank you for your presentation. I'm very, very, very proud of you as being one of the leading water experts in the state of Texas, and I think probably in the region and in the country. I said that to you privately in Fort Worth, and I want to say that here publicly because I truly believe it, having worked with you and having seen your work and having seen the work of some other places. So I'm very glad you're here. On slide 24, we refer to Oklahoma water. There has been some stalemate there. Can you tell me if there's been any progress on actually acquiring Oklahoma water?
My understanding, Erica, would you go to the next slide? This is just gives you a graphic of where the water is that's been looked at for the region. My understanding that there have been some, and I'm practicing law, it's not my strength, that there's been some actions at in the district courts regarding dismissing some of the cases, but Tarrant Region will refile them. Chris, can you help me? I don't remember the details of the lawsuits. It's still progressing.
There was a recent order on a motion to dismiss filed by the state of Oklahoma, and it did dismiss some of the claims brought by Tarrant Regional, in part because the court believed that Tarrant Regional should try to seek water through the regional compact regarding the Red River. So Tarrant Regional and the city, because we've partnered with them, are still very much alive here. And it looks like I believe there'll be years of litigation before we know for certain whether we'll be able to access that water.
So for now, that is not a viable source.
At this moment, we do not have any authorization to use that water.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But it's still, Judge Hill, it's still an alternative strategy for us because it's not dead.
Ms. M, what did you say?
No, I was just going to say it is still something we would consider viable because the decision has not been final, and it is a good source, it is a strong source, it is an economical source should we have access to it, and so we would very much consider it a possibility.
Okay. On slide 26, you talk about the Palestine project.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to see the corporation. One of our biggest obstacles has been our East Texas partners. Have we moved in the right direction with our East Texas partners?
I think that this project has focused a lot on our relationships locally, and Mary mentioned that we've not always we've been kind of grumpy toward each other. So we've made those steps forward in our region. As we have begun to deal with our East Texas neighbors, those river authorities and so forth that are in that part of the state, I think that the same kind of partnering is being built with them. I'll give you a quick example. Sabine River Authority is the authority that operates and manages Tewakene and Lake Fork. So we've built that relationship with them, as well as the Upper Neches River Water Authority that has Lake Palestine. So we're working a little differently through them to help build those relationships in East Texas. But no one wants you to take what they call their water.
Right.
So as we try to make those as best we can, we'll keep working there. But
that's good, because that has been one of our biggest challenges. The final thing that I want to talk about touches on what Ms. Margolin asked about other partners, the water plan. Now, this will come up when we come to putting together our legislative packet, the Texas Water Plan. Now, that plan, do you want to talk about that at all? Because that plan is not
in my opinion, particularly advantageous to Dallas. It is more, in my opinion, advantageous to San Antonio and some places down there that are really wanting out of water. So can you talk about that just
a little bit? Well, I think that the regional planning groups allow for the provision of water for their regions. I mean, I think that, so to that degree, I think it works well for us. You know, the issue that has been at the state legislature and will be there again is the funding of the statewide water plan. State Senator Kip Averitt has kind of led that charge, and I suspect we'll have conversations about that again. One of the things that we've had in our legislative package in the past is that we're not opposed to some sort of general revenue source, but we don't want our money to go somewhere else. And so so that's been basically our position in the past, and I don't suspect that might change.
That is the issue that I wanted you to address. Colleagues, this is going to come up again when we put together the legislative packet, and it is the issue of funding for the state water plan. As it stands now, we would pay a lot of the money, but we would be way down on the food chain in getting any return on the money. Ms. Puckett, do I have that sort of correct?
Well, that's our fear. We don't know how they would allocate the monies that they would, you know, take from the regions, and then who would get what first. If I have water and I don't have any impending disaster coming, I may not get that money first.
And the real concern about that is it basically may end up being a situation where a region that has planned and invested well,
like Dallas,
bails out a region that didn't do so well in their planning and investment. And
like
so
San Antonio.
That's one of the concerns and the awareness that all of you need to have about water and the water issues in the state. And it's going to become even more and more critical. It'll be a nationwide, worldwide issue over time. So
that's all I have. Thank you, Ms. Puckett. Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, please.
Jody, thank you for this good overview of our water supply strategy. I agree with you. This is probably one of the most important issues that as council members that we face, and therefore I have a strong sense of urgency about water supply and the strategy that goes with it. All you have to do is look at San Antonio and look at Atlanta and see the needs that they have from a water supply situation. Not only is it a concern for the citizens, but from an economic development, for a growth situation. So it's huge, huge concerns. You know, the reality of it is, and since I've become more and more aware of this, I see the strides that the city is doing. I see what with our greenness that we're doing and just how we're moving the ball forward. What, again, back to the sense of urgency, sometimes what we do, we take little bites along the way because you have to educate. Well, sometimes it's time to take bigger bites and just get in there and take that bite. And sometimes you take that bite and it might hurt for a little while, but that's what it takes. At the end of the day, you guys have done a tremendous job with our water. Water is one of the cheapest things we have. That is one of the cheapest things we have. A penny will buy you over 20 gallons of tap water. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
And something we don't really like to talk about because it is so cheap. A penny will buy you over 20 gallons. I think it's closer to 30. Being conservative man that I am, I'm saying 20. It'll buy you over 20 gallons of water. It's because you've done such a good job. It's because you've done such a good job. We talked about the fact that it's you know, that these projects are expensive. Go to slide 3, please.
Slide 3.
Yes. It's incredible. If you look at the fact sheet and you see the 148 billion gallons of water, again, a penny buys you 20 gallons. But also, you know, colleagues, look up there at the miles of water mains that we have and the miles of wastewater mains that we have. Over 9,200 some miles of, I'm going to use the word pipeline. And that's what it is, piping underneath our grounds. Of course, we own that dirt. But we've got over 9,000 miles of pipeline already. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
The you could go back and forth. You could go from Dallas, Texas to Los Angeles back and forth three times with the amount of pipeline that you've already put underneath the ground. So as we go through this and we do these exercises, again, I think it's important to realize that we're already, we've got a lot of the water main. We have cheap water at this point in time, but without question that from an economic development, from quality of life, and putting us out there in front of these other cities, this water is crucial. And we must look at all available resources and grab it now, and grab those resources now, and take these big chunks and just get out there and be very aggressive now. So I'm with you 1,000%. I'll back you up because I have this sense of urgency to do it now, because these other cities, they're going to wake up one of these days. So, but you're doing a fantastic job. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Allen. Mr. Jentisky, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good briefing, Jody. A couple comments and questions. You know, from my perspective, and I think you realize this, is that, you know, had we not had all the good planning, you had that list up there, you know, the 59 plan and this one and that one, we would not be in a position where we could be growing as the 8th largest city in America and the 12th and the 4th largest economic area in this country if we didn't have water. I mean, water is going to be the new gold somewhere down the road, and it's behooving upon us to make sure that we have the appropriate plans in place so that we're not short. Question, what are our obligations? We're the wholesale provider to many of the communities surrounding Dallas,
mm-hmm.
not just about Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Are those prioritized in any way, or is everybody on an equal footing? In other words, if indeed we found ourselves somewhere out there, you know, with a shortage of water because of whatever reason, who gets priority? Who gets the water?
Well, we are on an equal footing.
Okay, so everybody suffers equally.
With our wholesale customers.
Okay. And along that, I think that we have in place agreements that in those contracts where we sell them the water, that they're tied to the same conservation policies that the city of Dallas is?
The language in their contracts is that they shall implement like measures. They are also required by the state to submit water conservation plans. So as you know, as we move into these next years of planning and acquisition, it's in their best interest, of course, to not buy more water from us.
But Jody, it is not their, our rules are not their rules verbatim. And that's one of the things that we want to have a discussion. I mean, it's a general description. You have to have a conservation plan, but it may not look anything like ours. One of the things that we want to accomplish that I was speaking about a minute ago, as we develop partnerships, is see if we can't develop more uniformity with these rules. Now, it rains some parts of our region when it doesn't rain others, so it may not always work, but it's not verbatim the same set of rules.
Okay, well, I mean, I think we need to work on that because
right.
I think it'd be totally unfair that if we're required under contract to sell water to a municipality and they are just, you know, making no efforts other than maybe having a vague policy to conserve, reuse, or limit their growth in their water use, then we're ending up suffering or other municipalities are suffering because of that. I don't think it's fair.
Well. So, I wouldn't say it was that extreme, but that is one of the concerns we have, that we want some uniformity in those policies. And it will be a tough, because their answer would be to you, if I want to pay for it, I ought to get it. So in order to not be butting heads with each other like we always have been, which is not to anybody's benefit, we're working toward that goal.
Well, okay.
Right.
My comment in closing is, it's best to work on it when you don't have a crisis.
Right.
than wait until you have a crisis and try to figure out what the rules are.
Right.
My second one, and you may want to get this offline. I know we've had it in previous briefings. We get a lot of criticism from time to time that, you know, Dallas is a water hog. We use more water per capita than, you know, other cities of similar size and so forth and so on. When you dig down into that, you find out that there are extenuating circumstances, or not, I don't mean extenuating, but there's different circumstances that cause various cities to appear to use less water or appear to use more water that are maybe not relevant to how much each of us uses in our house, on our lawns, to drink, et cetera, et cetera. Is that something that you can put together and get?
Well, let me take you to slide 21 and see if that that kind of, to me, that kind of hits the mark. And that the, when you read the stories in the newspaper, the data that the Water Development Board publishes just total population, total use, and it doesn't take into account the differences in the communities.
Well, and that's where I was heading is, for example, the Dallas. We have, is it three now, Mr. Newman, two or three water bottling plants?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's water that, I guess sort of indirectly, if some of our residents go buy it at a grocery store and drink it, I guess we're using it. But that's different consumption, at least from my perspective, than people turning on their tap and getting water at their homes or watering their lawn.
Right.
So...
And so to the point on the next slide, it talks about the jobs that we have in our city. And, you know, TI uses a lot of water. We have a big hospital district. They use lots of water. So that translates back into jobs. And so one of the things we are looking at in our strategic, in our conservation strategic plan update is stratifying the uses. You know, is there ways to get at savings in either businesses or neighborhoods that we've not yet identified? You know, San Antonio is so different because of the way their system is run.
Right.
And they have private wells that serve different locations. And, you know, when I make these statements, it just sounds like I'm being defensive, and I'm just trying to create the right profile.
Well, where I was heading is, I mean, I saw the slides, but I just, as many times as I've seen them for the 5 years I've been on the council, you know, you still, you read the reports and you hear the grumblings about Dallas is still a water hog. So maybe we have a PR issue rather than a usage issue.
Well, I will say we still have ground to gain.
Yeah.
You know, and this is not East Texas or Houston where it rains a lot. You know, do we propose a turf replacement program, for example, in our water conservation strategic plan, like they do in Las Vegas and in the Phoenix and Tucson areas, as an example? Outdoor water use is still a big component, and when we bring that back, we'll be able to show where that water is and, you know, so what makes sense for our region.
Okay, the other big one, and the other big question is, you know, the ability to reuse water, because it's a huge capital expense to run parallel pipes for gray water or purple water or whatever you want to. What is it, purple?
Purple pipe.
It's purple pipe when you really don't want to drink it, but you probably could in an emergency. I don't know. What is it?
You could in an emergency,
okay.
I think.
What? Well, you know, if you get thirsty enough, I guess you might. We are serving a couple of golf courses and other large water users. What's the short answer as to the amount of capital dollars required to get some sort of a more expansive purple pipe system throughout the city? Because if indeed air irrigation, whether it's my house or a golf course or a shopping center or an office complex, is the biggest use of water that we have, we kind of have a choice. We either need to eliminate the need to water it all, or we need to provide the reused water instead of the fresh water or the drinking quality water to those facilities, and that's going to be requiring a huge, I mean, basically a parallel pipe system that we're probably never going to get to. But
right, I would never recommend.
In between?
I would never recommend a purple pipe system throughout the city. It is cost prohibitive.
Right.
That we will target particular businesses, and for instance, the line that's going toward the Stevens Park Golf Course. Part of that is, I think, under construction right now. It'll replace, 170 million gallons or more of water used, potable water that they've been using. And so that will also connect to the zoo. Rock 10 is a company that's along that path. There may be retrofits that we have to do. I don't have a number in my head.
No.
Our biggest bang for the buck is augmenting our lake supplies with the water. And so we may end up providing additional treatment. Some of our neighbors, some of our supplier neighbors, North Texas and Tarrant Regional, have wetlands projects that polish the water before it goes back into the lakes. So that's really the best bang for our buck from a capital expenditure standpoint. If we have new communities in parts of the southern sector, for instance, that might be suited for that, i.e. that the pipelines are adjacent to it where you can put a purple pipe system in where you have raw land, that might work. Or if there are other parts in the city that redevelop.
Okay.
We do have a grant project, I'm trying to think, it's with the Bureau of Land Reclamation, regarding the potential of using reuse water in downtown chilling environment, chillers. So we're looking at those types of big things. And if there was other vacant land in the city that could redevelop, that might work. But to go in and retrofit and put in another, no.
Okay.
And that's what happens in the some of the communities in the East Florida. You know, when they built new communities, they had a purple
right.
pipe system built with that.
Okay. Well, all I can say in closing is just make sure that when we turn our faucets on, that water, good clean water, keeps coming out.
That's our mission every day.
Right.
Thank you for
Thanks.
Reminding me, though.
Thank you, Mayor. On page 4, Jody, I know Mary did make a brief statement about surface water. It's owned by the state of Texas. Could you just tell me how the formula is used that for the surface water? I mean, how is it, who in turn grants permit for the benefit of use? Could you just go again?
The state of Texas, in this case, it's the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, has the statute responsibility for water rights in the state. And they use hydrological records, rainfall records, and so forth to determine how much water is available. And entities will make application to use that water. They'll look at, you know, how much is available, and they'll permit that water. And so that's done through the state.
And when it's done through the state, that means it's like the city of Dallas get permitted for
right.
so much water. So do they use that if we sell water to the suburbs of the city? Is that a calculation in there, or they get
right.
there different?
When we go to, for instance, I'll use Lake Ray Hubbard as the example. I mentioned we made an application for additional water in that lake. We proved to them there's more water to get. We also proved to them we have a demand that we'll meet with that water.
Okay.
We just can't go get water without an associated demand. So the answer to your question is yes. The demand side is included in the need to get the water.
Okay. On page 6, I believe your the second bullet, the memorandum agreement that you say you can come back to the city, to the council on 2010, is there going to be a revision to that agreement we had in the past going forward?
We had, back when we briefed the council a little over a year ago about our approach and trying to take a consensus approach with the customers, we've ended up at some places where we think there'll be some minor changes, but we don't believe that they'll be significant, because it actually has served both the city and the customers pretty well.
Well, but I know the city that we supply water to, their population is growing, and you said we can lower water rate. So would that rate increase, if they use more? And I do understand our brief right now, how do we conserve the water for the city of Dallas? But if we sell them to the other cities, are we, in our memorandum agreement, are we justifying the rates at a lower rate?
What we're doing in the memorandum agreement is confirming and establishing the methodology used to calculate the rate. So
we are not allowed to make money on water sales. We can cover our costs, basically. That's a real simplified version. But we can't make money on water sales.
Okay, we can't make money, but I know we're doing a big major pipeline.
We cover costs. Absolutely.
They share in those pipeline costs.
They share in the first pipeline. Mm-hmm. Okay. On page 7, we talked about Lake Palestine. I believe about 2 years ago, we were talking about, doing a pipeline from Lake Palestine to Dallas. We'll be looking at about $1 million per mile or whatever. What is our calculation? Are we still working on the pipeline from Palestine to Dallas? Where are we?
Yeah, that's our project that we've partnered with the Tarrant Regional Water District to bring that water in. And our piece of that project is estimated somewhere around $800 million. So that size pipeline is significantly more than $1 million a mile. It'll be somewhere 84 to 96 inch pipeline or larger.
So it's an increase. I mean, a year ago it was just $1 million, but now, that's what I recall, about $1 million a mile. So
okay.
It's more?
Yes, sir. It's that size pipeline. That might have been a number relative to our water main replacement program, as opposed to which are smaller mains, and this being over 80 miles plus the size of this main is somewhere 10, it may be as high as $15 million a mile. It's as big as this room.
So we have not started on that project, right? We're doing the design.
We've not started on the construction. We've just had preliminary work done with routes and things like that.
We bought property and easements.
We bought property
and
stuff, but so the cost is still going up. We don't know what the total cost is going to be, but we're still in the process. Hey, we did the design.
No, the design is not complete at all. We've just determined with the district a corridor for that line. We do own land at the lake for the pump station. I don't recall that we own any right-of-way for that line. We've been getting right-of-way for an additional pipeline through here. You've seen those items come through your agenda in Kaufman County for 144-inch we have planned here in the future. But the preliminary design work, the sizing of the pipeline, where the interim pump stations may need to be, where the water's going to be diverted off of that line, all that process is underway right now.
Okay, last question. I guess since we have so many water lines and so many pipes that we have to replace, have we came to the calculation how much it's going to cost us to replace the old pipeline and refit it with a new pipeline, how many miles?
In our annual capital budget, and as part of a kind of a rolling 10-year capital improvement program, we've included the distribution system and sewer system main replacements. And those run anywhere. We spend about $100 to $150 million a year on replacing the old distribution and wastewater mains within the system proper. So that's part of our capital program, as well as these other large projects to connect for the future. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Well, I think you are, but I guess my main concern, we have so many water mains is breaking throughout the city because they have old mains. We got to replace the main, and I'm just trying to make sure we got enough water supply, but we're also losing water because the water main is breaking. We're not recapturing most of that water. The plumb is going
about. About half, and sometimes a little more, of our capital expenditures every year is to replace pipes, and we'll have to continue doing that, and we're going to have to keep investing in the water system for exactly that reason. You're right, exactly that reason.
I just try to make sure we are aware of it, make sure we stay on top of that. We can bring all the water in, but if we not replace the old water main and they break it, we lose the water.
Our leakage is about the same as the industry average. We would like to improve that, but we're not out of line particularly.
And I think that's part of a cornerstone of our, to try to keep our system sustainable,
right,
is that if you're pumping in as much as you're losing, it doesn't make sense. You're right on about that. And
right.
So that's why our capital program has these significant investments for those replacements.
And I know Ron has a question there, we gobble a whole lot of water, we waste a lot of water, but I think that you still got to look at the state of the Dallas, the land mass that we got as a coverage division. We got people coming into the city, and that's probably why you see the rate going up during the daytime. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning.
Appreciate your efforts and leadership and keeping us focused. And the same thing with you, Mary. I do appreciate you were a speaker at the Dallas Breakfast Group, was it a day ago, 2 days ago? I can't remember. And part of your discussion amongst the private sector business leaders you espoused, now, Ms. Margolin and I were in the room, so we're a little bit of a captive audience, but about our long-term water use. And before I was on the council, I remember people talking about, if you get on city council, you got to think about long-term water use. And quite honestly, as an elected official, that's not something you worry about unless, as Ron says, you turn the faucet and water doesn't run. So, but thank you. I appreciate you keeping us focused. Couple questions, please. I'm flipping through here. Talk to me a minute about on slide, well, I don't know what slide it is here. I want to get out of this. The map on slide one that shows each of the regions. How were the regions created? Is that a state of Texas legislative deal?
Yes.
That's not something that we created. We were just part of. The state was divided up.
Right. The state, through a legislative process, when the bills were written, was divided up.
Well, it also has some basis in water basins, too.
Okay. Yes. Do we risk that? Which goes to my next question, Mary. Do we risk boundary changes?
There could be, but you know, it's a political and has some logic in water.
Have they changed boundaries in the past? No. I'm not trying to create an issue.
No.
I'm just anticipating.
They were established in the Senate Bill 1 in 1997, and I don't. There's not been any discussion about changing any of the boundaries.
Okay. And how does our region C compare to other regions? I mean, are we ahead of the game competitively? Are we on par?
In what way?
Our ability to, for how we're measured as a region, whether it be conservation or consumption, that sort of thing, how do we compare? I know you showed the other cities, but if the state of Texas looks at, if they say they own the groundwater, and then they divide up the state in regions, my question obviously is, or my question goes to, how well are we positioning ourselves in Region C vis-a-vis these other regions?
Well, the state, just to be clear, the state has jurisdiction over surface water.
Surface water.
And is actually developing more jurisdiction over groundwater.
Okay.
And that's going to be a pretty exciting discussion for those that rely on groundwater. Now, how do we measure up or how do we compare? I'll just give you a quick example. We're in this Region C, which is the center of, you know, one of the largest metropolitan areas in the country. We need more water. Region D out here, which is out in East Texas, which happens to be where there is more water, they don't have much of a need for additional water. So how we compare is sort of part of, it's an apple.
That would fly in the face with what Mary said, because Mary said it had to go, it went back to a certain extent to the resources.
Well,
you said the amount of water capacity is how it's divided up.
No, I said the basin.
Yeah.
The basin.
This river,
the water flows.
This is the Trinity River Basin,
yep.
Mostly. This is the Sabine and the
Sulphur
River Basin. And then upper basin, lower basin.
Okay. Sort of. All right. I'm switching gears a second. You referenced new water source timetable examples, and it talked about Lake Fork and the city paying the debt service until 2005. We paid off our investment in 2005. What was unique about 2005?
I'm trying to remember the page, but
I can't see it on my doing here.
We entered in a contract with the Texas Utility Generating Company to buy that lake, contractually buy the water rights in that lake. And so we paid the debt service for the construction of that lake, and that lake is paid for.
And the point
paid for.
And
okay,
the point being that started in 1981 and took till 2005 to pay off.
No, I get it. I did not know it was paid for. So
yeah.
The city paid debt service.
Yeah,
no, so I didn't know what you meant by that.
And if you go back and look at the lakes that are on page 7, the ones that we don't pay debt service on any longer are everything you see on this sheet. We're not having to pay for the supply itself. We have to pay for the O&M cost of the lake. Because there are operation maintenance costs, but I think we paid off even Ray Roberts. We actually issued some debt to pay it off.
Okay.
I don't remember for sure, but everything else is paid off.
That's great. Number seven that you're at, as I look at this, Lake Palestine would be reverse flow. You'd have to pump it up, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm just trying to use logic here. Obviously, it's less expensive when it's gravity flow.
Absolutely.
As opposed to reverse flow. Okay. Okay.
And just to be clear, up to about this point, it has to be pumped from East Texas, and then it flows by gravity into our Eastside plant. But clearly, this is going to be, it's uphill all the way.
Okay.
As is Toledo Bend, as is other things. But
On page 14, you looked at our 2060 water supply, and it begged the question, I think Jerry was talking, Mr. Allen was talking a little bit about it, and I want to extend that. How do we enlist our customer cities? We have 18 customer cities?
Well, 26.
Okay, 26 customer cities. Do we enlist them in the efforts for lobbying with the legislature as it relates to protecting our water rights and those sort of things?
Do we enlist them?
How do we engage them in this process? Yes, we're the big Dallas water utilities and that sort of thing, but it would seem to think it would make sense since they have an inherent need to have inexpensive water and a readily source of water. Do we use them in the legislative process?
We use our customer cities. We use the other water purveyors in the area. During the last legislative session, Jody and I met regularly with the other purveyors, the managers of the other purveyors. You have hired lobbyists. Tilco works for us. They're a very good water lobby. We know how critical this is, so we all hands on deck when it comes to this.
And our 26 customers, they participate, and they're aggressive with us in protecting our needs.
They understand that it's all of our needs.
Okay. I was going to ask a question about the cost savings. You said the 20% that I see in the next deal. Okay. And I asked a question about pumping upstream. Okay. I think that's it for now. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Our next presentation to you is on meet and confer. As you remember, for the last couple of legislative sessions, police and fire have in state law the right for meet and confer. And all we're doing today is telling you how that process would operate as it begins. And we don't know when it will begin yet. We've had some brief conversations with police and fire. It will be up for them to initiate it. I just wanted you to see how it works before we begin and some of the results in some other cities. I will tell you that I think police and fire both have worked, and police started this earlier than fire did, but have worked very successfully in this kind of framework of negotiating and talking about what employee needs are, and we've done that for 3 to 4 years now. Meet and confer is a more formal kind of obligated statutorily process, but we've been using a similar process to this. David's just going to tell you quickly how it would work. It's just to let you know that I think in the next several months the manager's office and we'll start with the police and fire on this process perhaps.
Thank you, Mary. As Mary said, I'm going to provide you with an overview of several areas regarding meet and confer here in the state of Texas, and we're also going to provide you with a national update. On page 2, you'll see the list of items that I'm going to share with you at a high-level overview. What is meet and confer? What does the state meet and confer law says? What are some of the impacts? And then we're going to talk about what collective bargaining is and what some of the impacts have been with collective bargaining in various cities throughout the state. And then finally, we're going to talk to you about the national bills that are on the horizon regarding meet and confer and collective bargaining. So what is meet and confer? Meet and confer really is a process that allows, in our case, police and fire uniform employees a process to discuss various employee issues such as wages, benefits, and working conditions with management. And the focus is to really make sure that employees have the opportunity to share their concerns, and then we respond if we so choose to do so. Meet and confer is not a requirement. We are not required to meet. We're not required to establish an agreement. It is just a process that is available to us now through the law. In September of this year, House Bill 2307 was established, and of course the bill covers for our uniform employees of police and fire. It is for the non-exempt employees. So you have a chart listed on page 4 that shows you those employees that are excluded from the process or who may benefit as a result of changes to wages, benefits, etc. On page 5, you'll see that the law again permits three areas of discussions: wages, benefits, and work conditions. And this page also describes to you again that the police department is required to be established by a group only if they have represented at minimum 3% of the police force over the past year. And they then may establish a representative to serve on a meet and confer team. The fire department may also identify representatives, one per group, but they're not required to have a minimum of 3% representation. Combined, police and fire together will represent, if they establish a team, the meeting and confer team for the city. But the one thing that we should stipulate is that neither groups are able to strike. It is still illegal to strike, although meeting and confer has been established. I'm going to skip page 6 and go to page 7 and talk to you about how the meet and confer process actually works. If police and fire decide to form groups and establish a meet and confer team, they may petition to the city manager's office, and once the city manager's office receives that petition, then the governing body, city council, has three options to choose. The first option is to actually recognize the groups and to allow meet and to permit meet and confer to continue or to establish. The second is to defer the recognition and to order an election to the voters to establish whether or not the voters want meet and confer to be established among City of Dallas employees. The third is to order a certification election. Now, this certification election is an election for the employees to discern whether or not there's enough headcount to represent the groups. If it is determined that there is enough headcount, then the governing body has to go back and select between option 1 and 2. It's somewhat complicated and somewhat mechanical, but this is the way the law reads. The bottom line is you either recognize the groups, you go to the voters for a vote, or you go to the employees to see if they're actually represented by these groups. So a little complicated, but discerning. On page 8, you'll see that, again, there are no requirements to meet. There are no requirements to establish agreements. But if agreements are established, they must be resulted in writing. That is something very similar to collective bargaining, I'll share with you shortly. But again, the city nor the employee groups are required to meet or are required to establish agreements. Regardless of the circumstance, whether or not the groups move forward with meet and confer and the city recognizes them, there is a very clear understanding that the city maintains control over all terms of employment, to include wages, benefits, etc. And so that is very important, because we don't want there to be any confusion that the city at any point, or this governing body at any point, won't have the final say-so on what the final establishment of wages and benefits actually are with the city. So what have been some of the meet and confer impacts across the state? The city's Human Resources Department has done research as best we could with the various cities. The information is not always clear as it relates primarily to what happened or what the cost is, but we obtained some information from various cities, and we want to share that with you. City of Austin established meet and confer for their police in 1995, and in 2007 extended it not just for the police, but also for the emergency management services team. Overall, this year they established a 4-year agreement. That 4-year agreement constituted a 9% increase in pay and a 3% increase in the pension system. We're not clear what the 3% for the pension system represents, but we're going to continue to research in those areas. In the city of Austin, firefighters are recognized under collective bargaining, a little bit stronger, and I'll share that with you shortly, than meet and confer. Another city, on the next slide, city of Fort Worth, established meet and confer in 2008, and the police meet and confer team requested a 30% raise over 3 years. In 2008, the results showed that a 12.75% increase in pay was granted over 4 years, and the continuation of step increases also was granted. San Angelo, we didn't get very much information, but we are sharing with you what we have, and we're still verifying the accuracy of the data. But in 2009, San Angelo established meet and confer, and they, the officers received a 10% increase in pay. We're not sure if that's over 1 or more years. In Abilene, you see the results on page 14. Police received 18%, and fire received 15% over 2 years. And then on page 19, you'll see for meet and confer, Houston Police also have agreements, which I'll leave to your leisure to read. Another area of agreements is called collective bargaining. And on page 16, on page 17 rather, you will see that there is a definition of collective bargaining. The difference between collective bargaining, meet and confer, and collective bargaining is collective bargaining requires meetings and requires written agreements. And so there's many more things that must be taken into consideration in collective bargaining. We have also provided you with some of the results. I won't go into the detail of all of them, but I will draw your attention to slide 20. So the Houston Fire Department, as I mentioned earlier, is collective bargaining, and they established an agreement over several years, and that agreement cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $35.5 million. When we think about meeting confer and collective bargaining, they're all based on a law. So we also took a look at what's taking place at the national level. And right now at the national level, there are two bills. One is in the House of Representatives, 413, and one in the Senate, 1611. And these bills are companion bills, and they pretty much read the same. But it would require Federal Labor Relations Authority to determine whether each state is in compliance with this federal bill. It will require, as a result, the definition of collective bargaining more so than meet and confer. And so on slides 22 and 23, it gives you the details of what that authority would be evaluating, but it is on the horizon. So in summary, we just wanted to share with you a quick overview of what we can anticipate in months and years to come, perhaps. And on page 24, you see the summary that there is a House bill that was approved September of this year, and for our uniform officers, it is a meet and confer bill. Again, we're not required to meet, we're not required to establish agreements, but it is a process that if a petition is submitted to the city manager and you approve, it gives the city the right to discuss with our uniform officers.
As I said before, this is a process, the meat of this process, we've engaged in for the last 4 years, and I'm comfortable with and comfortable with the folks that we discuss it with, and just wanted you to know today how the statute kind of formalizes that structure. So there's no decision process needed today, just to tell you here's what we're going to be working on in the next few months.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, we have, let me call the speaker's name just for the record. Okay.
I'm going to interrupt real quick.
Unzama Nguyen, Tamara Washington, Leslie and Alan Davis, Marvin Crenshaw, Gwayne Wooten. Mr. Mayor, we have one here.
Okay.
Two? Oh, okay. Tamara Washington, you want to come up and state your name and your address for the record. We're ready for you to speak before the council.
My name is Tamara Washington. My address is 2814 Painted Trail, Dallas 75237. There's a couple of issues that I'd like to talk about. Last time I was here, I talked about how a company, Everhome Mortgage Company, had illegally foreclosed on a property. Basically, you know, with the money they're planning to get illegally from the government because my home is an FHA home. You know, maybe Eric Lammons, whose name was on the loan modification agreement, maybe he was planning to take a vacation with the money, you know, or, you know, take a vacation and then sit on a plane, and I don't have any money to take a vacation. Maybe you, but he, if I did, maybe he would sit next to you or to sit next to me or you and talk about the weather. Or maybe with the money he was planning to send his kids to a private school. Anyway, I have received correspondence back on my complaint. And basically, I'm just going to keep you updated, just any correspondence I get from them. From the complaint, I will forward it to you and just let you know the information up until the time that, you know, an agreement or a settlement is reached. So I'll just keep all of that open and all that information available to all of you. And I'll just get your fax numbers off the internet.
Okay.
Second thing I want to talk about is health care. at this time, I don't have any health care. And there is a program called the Parkland Health Care Plus program. I'll just give you a little bit background. From the time I was 12 years old, I didn't have 12 to about 18. I didn't have any medical insurance, and my mother received veterans benefits. She received $100 for me. When I got 18, I was told that if I stay in school, that I would they would continue sending her the $100. However, they cut it off anyway, even though we proved that to them. So I went to work. I worked my way through school. I worked my way through college. I didn't have any health insurance in college. And so, when I got out of college, had a situation where my brother was taken into custody by CPS. My mother was traveling through her for Texas. Anyway, I ended up fighting CPS. I got custody of my brother. And the caseworker in the case, the subject came up. Do you, you know, I don't know why people of minority don't live here, don't stay here in West Texas. And that's just a comment that was made. Anyway, on health care, let's say with the Parkland Plus program, even if you can't afford it, if it's available to you, you don't qualify. I've been told there's a problem with my blood count. I've been told that since I was 18. And anyway, I can't see a hematologist because the job I work for offers insurance even though I cannot afford it. And it's come to my understanding that, that even animals, pets can get health insurance, so they can get health insurance. They can, if a pet or a dog gets sick, they can go to the doctor, and they don't even pay taxes. Thank you for your time.
Marvin Crenshaw.
Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 Malcolm X Boulevard. I want to just basically talk about three things. With all sincerity, Mr. Mayor, it's good to see you back. I had an opportunity once in my life to make a trip over to China, and I was glad. I enjoyed myself as education and a learning experience, so I was glad to get back home. The second thing is that I was before the council about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and there was a contract on there from FYB. They're doing paving and installing pipes. They were going to District 4. But in District 7, over by Malcolm X and Oakdale, they're blocking the streets. They've been gone for 3 months. They left some dirt, concrete, and everything in the streets. And in front of one lady's house, she can't park. We stopped a code enforcement officer the other day, and she was trying to have guests over for Thanksgiving. They had nowhere to park. Same thing will happen to her Christmas when people are coming up the street. They have to go on one side because the other side is blocked. And we wish that something could happen over there. The third thing I want to talk about is this, is that the year 2010 is going to be very interesting because of the fact in the year 2010, that's the 45th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. That's why we're here. I think you might be appointing the redistricting commission at that time. And despite the fact that some people say, well, you know, you were just being too overbearing as far as 14-1 is concerned, I don't look at it that way because of the fact that of the struggles that we had to get to go through, people that had to go through over the years to get to the point where we are at this present time. And we need to just stay vigilant, at least I am, on that, to make sure that the citizens of Dallas are served by 14-1. Because as one of the plaintiffs in the last voting rights lawsuit, we didn't file it for just the people to get elected and have a title by their name. It was to serve the interests and the needs of the citizens of this city and all districts, but in particular those districts that traditionally have not been been served. So again, if I don't see you again before the holidays, I wish you have your happy holiday and look forward to seeing you after the new year. We can keep going. So thank you very much. Don't eat too much turkey or whatever.
Ms. Davis, big day coming up? We got to catch up here. We need to have a meeting, so.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Carolyn. Happy birthday to you.
Give us some of that.
And we're adjourned. Happy birthday, Carolyn.
At 11:35 a.m.